Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture.
In the groundwork for the metaphysics of morals, Kant engages, shortly after talking about the goodwill, in a kind of digression that may throw you when you're reading through it for the first or second or however many times. And he starts talking about why we were given reason, why that's part of our being as human beings. You know, what good does it do? What is it for? And he's adopting a kind of fairly uncommitted to any sort of creator or anything like that, but a teleological perspective on the universe, on human beings, on being in general, by bringing this up. Why is he bringing this up in the first place? Why is he going into a digression? Well, it has to do with the will, the goodwill. What's the point of having a goodwill? We saw that it's not, you know, just so it brings about good effects or anything like that. So why would we have something like that? Does that make sense for us? So he says, there must arise the suspicion that perhaps its secret basis, where it's coming from, is some high-flown fantasticality, and we have misunderstood the purpose of nature in attaching reason to our will as its governor. So why were we given reason so that reason could direct the will? As a matter of fact, Kant will say at a number of places, this is kind of a tricky thing to make sense of, that the will is practical reason, or reason practically, you know, working. So reason is directing the will is directing our activity, our motives, making us into what it is that we want to be, or desire to be, or choose to be. Why, though? What's the whole point behind all of this? He says, we're going to submit our idea to an examination from this point of view. In the natural constitution of an organic being, one contrived for the purpose of life. So there's already some teleology or the study of purposes or ends or reasons here involved. One contrived for the purpose of life. Let us take it as a principle that in it no organ is to be found for any end unless it is the most appropriate to that end and the best fitted for it. So that's already kind of a stretch, right? If you know much about physiology, you know, we have appendices. I'm not even sure where it's located, but, you know, it used to serve a purpose but doesn't serve a purpose anymore. Certainly not the best adapted to what it does, but let's just go with Kant on that, okay? So, suppose now that for a being possessed of reason and a will, the real purpose of nature were his preservation, his welfare, or in a word, his happiness. So, that's one of the possible answers, or actually two sets of answers to this question, right? Why were we given reason? Well, maybe it's so that we could better pursue happiness. And we have to explore this question, well, what does that mean? What is happiness? And we'll do that in some other place. Or maybe it's self-preservation. You know, and Kant's not neatly distinguishing these, but if we're thinking about this in our own times, there's plenty of people out there who think that the reason why we have the kinds of brains and therefore the kind of intellectual processes that we do and the capacity for choice that we do is it leads us to having better outcomes in terms of, you know, survival or passing on our genetic material. That's what, you know, evolution is supposed to attain, right? So Kant is considering these possibilities. Let's say, just assuming, that that's actually the case. So did whatever gave us reason, did that do a good job in doing that? If that's the goal, being happy or just self-preservation, did it do a really good job? Well, Kant's answer is no. So let's look at why. He says, for all the actions he has to perform with this end in view and the whole rule of its behavior, if he wanted to be happy, and we have to actually pause here for a second. What does it mean to be happy? Kant says that happiness is kind of a vague, indistinct idea, and I'm going to do another core concept on that where we explore that in a bit more detail. Suffice it to say for here, what does happiness mean? Kant says it means the satisfaction of our desires and inclinations. So whatever it is that you desire, pick the whole batch of it, right? Whatever it is that you desire, not just now, but also later on. So if you're, you know, a kid, you desire some things. Later on, you become an adult, you start to realize that you desire other things. Get a bit older, you desire other things. The satisfaction of all of those and your inclinations, that's happiness. So let's say we can't actually wrap our heads around that. Does reason help us with that? Well, you know, some philosophers think so. You know, we can sort of like balance. We figure out what the end is. We want to be happy. Now we figure out all the means, and we balance the means to fit the end. Kant says, you know, actually, if you wanted to do that sort of thing, you'd have been better off just implanting instincts in us that would make us do that fairly automatically, like dogs or cats or earthworms do. I mean, earthworms, the satisfaction of their desires and inclinations is to dig around in the mud and bump up against each other and mate and eat stuff and excrete stuff and not get pulled apart, I guess. That's pretty much it for them. And they do a pretty good job in attaining that for the most part. Actually, they like to come up to the surface when it rains, not because they have to, but because they people think there's some sort of desire on their part to do that. But it's an instinct, right? If we were intended by nature only to aim at happiness, if that was the highest limit, then it would make sense to give us instincts that would have made that happen for us. And you could say, well, you know, we do have instincts. We want to eat, we want to, you know, drink, we want to engage in sex, we want to sleep, you know, we want to be warm, we want to be dry when we're wet. Maybe reason could take these in and kind of process them and tell us what to do. But, you know, that's kind of a low level, isn't it? We don't have instincts that tell us, think about the universe. Or if we do, it doesn't work infallibly the way that animal instincts seem to in many cases. And it doesn't even seem to have like the sort of workings that other drives do. So that doesn't work. So we haven't been given these. He says, in actual fact, we also find that the more a cultivated reason concerns itself with the aim of enjoying life and happiness, the further does man get away from true contentment. So this is funny because Kant is saying when we do actually practically reason, those of us who spend time trying to figure out, hey, I understand now what's going to make me happy. What do I have to do to get over there to get that stuff that makes me happy? He says this leads to a kind of hatred of reason. For when they balance all the advantage they draw, I will not say from thinking out the arts of ordinary indulgence, but even of science, they discover they have, in fact, only brought more trouble on their heads than they have gained in the way of happiness. And this is very interesting. On this account, they come to envy rather than to despise the more common run of men. So those who, like, map out their life and think it out, you know, thoroughly and use reason, here's the end, you know, what are the means, what are the means to those means, what are the means? Kant thinks that if you look at them, and here he's kind of making an empirical argument, isn't he? You know, a guy who says he's, you know, against making empirical arguments, he says, if you look at them, they tend to be less happy than the people who just kind of, you know, willy-nilly go through things and bump into happiness over here and over here and just kind of, you know, things fall into place for them. Neither one end up being particularly happy. Neither one of them get all of their desires and satisfactions, desires and inclinations satisfied. But the one who uses reason actually ends up getting less of it, he says. Now, I don't know if that's really the case, but let's go with Kant for a moment. Let's assume that that actually is the case. So he says, reason is not sufficiently serviceable for guiding the will safely as regards its objects and the satisfaction of all our needs, which in fact it even multiplies, because, you know, he's right there. If you think about it, as soon as you start using reason, which isn't just a matter of like having, you know, premises and then reasoning to conclusions, it's a matter of looking at the world and saying, there's a lot of possibilities there. I could do some things. I could apply the technology that I have here to change this, make it better. I could even this process out. Once you start doing that, just start applying that to your own life. Just focus just on your own life, or just pick one area of it. You start doing that, you find more projects and more plans than you would ever have time to carry out. And how does that feel? Well, that doesn't actually make you feel happy. That now gives you more desires which are not going to be satisfied. So Kant says, an implanted natural instinct would have led us much more surely, but nonetheless reason has been imparted to us as a practical power. That is, one which is to have influence on the will. So what is the purpose? If it's not to make us happy, because it doesn't do that very well, and it's not just to attain, you know, survival. As a matter of fact, if you want to survive certain situations, you probably shouldn't think too much, right? you should probably ignore a lot of the factors that reason would say, hey, look over there, check that out. And you wouldn't want to spend a lot of time, you know, processing things if it's, you know, do or die, fight or flee, those sorts of situations. Well, if reason isn't for that, then what is it for? What other purpose would there be in giving us reason, which could then tell the will what to do? You know, rather than, say, instincts directing the will, as they do in animals, or, you know, something like problem solving, but at a much lower level, perhaps. Why do we have this faculty that's unparalleled in all the other species that we come across? Well, another possibility is we're supposed to be aiming at something higher than happiness. That's not to say that happiness is a bad thing. For Kant actually thinks we have a duty to try to work for other people's happiness, and that it's not bad if we work for our own happiness, provided it doesn't keep us from doing our duty. But we do have a higher calling, something woven into the very fabric of the beings that we are, Kant thinks, and that is to do duty for the sake of duty, for the right reason, for the right motive. That's a matter of a kind of willing. That's the good will. And so he says, reason has been imparted to us as a practical power, that is, as one which is to have influence on the will. Its true function must be to produce a will which is good, not as a means to some other end. So not because it gets us praise or because it will lead us to being happy because, you know, we'll get everything that we want, but because there's a goodness intrinsic to the will itself when it is a good will. It's not good for something else. It's not good on account of something else. It is good in itself. And the purpose of reason, Kant thinks, is to be our tool by which we actually bring that about in ourselves. We make ourselves into the goodwill, the conscient goodwill. So he says, a will which is good, not as a means to some other end, but in itself. For this function, reason was absolutely necessary in a world where nature has everywhere gone to work with a purpose of manner. And he says, this doesn't have to be the only good. Such a will need not on this account be the sole and complete good, but it must be the highest good and the condition of all the rest, even of our demands for happiness. So, Kant is thinking that the reason why we're given reason, the reason for reason, is that we can actually produce something that goes beyond the realm of mere nature as we experience it here, goes beyond what we start with, and refines that best part of ourselves to make it into what it could be, what its potential is. And his way of thinking about this, there's other people who have thought, you know, similar thoughts. His way of thinking about this centers around the conception of duty as being that which we ought to will. There's a certain purity here on Kant's view, one that whether you agree with it or to disagree with it, it has to be acknowledged. He's sort of eclipsing the question of happiness and saying, that's down here. But humanity is all the way from the top to the bottom. And the stuff up here is way more important than the stuff that's just down here, and we have to attend to it. And no amount of like piling things up in terms of happiness, survival, is going to get you to morality. So Kant is setting a clear scission, a dividing line. But this is what's higher, this is what's lower. So that's the purpose of rationality. That's what we're supposed to be directed towards, according to Kant.
Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.